Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love for all of these. I only know I swell with pride and deep within my breast I thrill to see, oh glory faint, the breeze.
Microsoft. I hope that's only an improvement and things aren't going to get worse or cost more. We've had some interesting interviews over the weekend as part of our radio background. And we have a guy named Romeo who I met by accident and did a couple hours interview with him last week. Turns out he's a refugee from Latin America who was put in a military school funded by the U.S. military, apparently, and he later became a refugee to the United States, and he's an artist. Very, very great humor. It's a little rough, and so that's why it's more mature, but it's fascinating, it's interesting, it's humorous, and it's very informative, and you're hearing a lot about, more and more about M13, these gangs, in throughout that spread from Latin America through Los Angeles, San Francisco, across the country. And nobody knows, at least they're not talking, they don't know much about these people, these youths, why they're so skilled with using those firearms and that. We'll discuss this Friday in the interview that I had to edit down about who these people are, how they became what they are, and in the fact the United States is again reaping what we've sown. We don't think these foreign policy policies out, and we don't know when to curtail stop some of these policies and funding some of these agendas, because it comes back to haunt us. Now the Russians are doing a very similar thing. They've abducting young kids. Up to the age of 9, I think, it is estimated, according to intelligence sources that I've talked to, and maybe as many as 50,000 of these kids, or 5,000, I'm not quite sure, still it's a lot, who have been abducted, taken to Russia, and given military training. They're going to come back, going to be sent back into Pakistan and Afghanistan to subvert. And, of course, as Brigadier Engel, who spent 30 years on the Northwest frontier with the Bengal Lancers and was one of the founders of the Pakistan Military Academy. He said that, and we've studied this, that there have been 4 wars with the Afghans, and the British lost all 4. They got their butts kicked red. But so what they did was to fence them in, you know, keep the bastards out. And there was only one time that the Afghans were defeated, and it was back, I think, in the 15th century, and we'll get into that. There's not much, or some interesting birthdays today. President, the Vice President Charles Fairbanks, he was president, I think, when William Howard Taft, the biggest man ever to occupy the White House in more ways than one, over 300 pounds, they had to make a special, cast a special tub for him. He was the founder of the Taft dynasty, the Taft Republicans from Ohio, which gave us Senator Robert Taft, Mr. Republican, and a governor, and I believe a state attorney general. And also we have Henry Morgenthau, who was famous. He started his career by, I think he was a diplomat in Turkey, and he witnessed the Turkish Holocaust involving the Armenians, in which after World War One, the Turks went in there and just did horrible things, drove the Armenians out of, that part of Armenia, raped, tore babies out of women's wombs, set them on fire, horrible, horrible things that were done. And he witnessed a lot of this and wrote back to Washington. To this day, Turkey refuses, like Japan, refuses to apologize for this Holocaust that they inflicted upon the Armenian race. We've had some great Armenians who have come to the United States. The guy who wrote The Grapes of Wrath, Armenians settled in the Central Valley of California, and they were despised, they were discriminated against, and of course we had one Armenian, George Duke Majan. I think he came from New York, though, who was state attorney general and governor of the state of California. And then we've had composers, writers, great Armenians who contributed, come to America to contribute, not to corrupt, as we've seen with so many other groups, Chinese, Filipinos, Canadians, that sort. Nazis, I can't forget them. Also today is the birthday of Irving Berlin, who, fascinating, having gone to music school, we had to learn about what his secret was. It was very simple. He wrote all of his songs, and he could only play the piano in the F key, the key of F, and all of his songs are written in the key of F, and he's most famous for his, this is the Army, oh, I hate to get up in the morning, and we'll play that Friday with the best of the week, and some other things about Irving Berlin. It's interesting, Russian Jewish immigrant to the United States, I think he came here as a baby. I don't know, I'll get his Jewish name, and he married an Irish Catholic, had four daughters. It's very interesting. There's a lot of this Jews marrying Irish and Catholics. It's fascinating. You know, talk about biculturalism. And then we had the great communist painter, Mexican painter, Salvador Dali, was born today. And we had this man who caused a lot of problems, very controversial. He's articulate. That makes him dangerous. Louis Farrakhan was born today. And then we had, let's see, who else? Among the deaths today, the guy who gave us ganja and reggae, Bob Marley, died at age 49. He's from South America, the Caribbean. And then on this date in 1858, the state of Minnesota was admitted to the Union. And, of course, they stayed in the Union, and we have one major meatpacker, the Hormel, George Hormel Packing Company out of Austin, Minnesota. And, of course, this Hormel who came to San Francisco caused a lot of problems, was involved in the Steve Nery case, and meddled with the military justice system. He was asking to be appointed ambassador to Luxembourg, and Hormel believed to be ill with lupus. That's the question that's being asked about, is he looks ill. And we'll get more into the Hormel family, and they were also involved with the meatpacking industry in Argentina. And that's where the Pifre connection, the Juan Pifre connection, and the bank of the province of Buenos Aires comes in. Also on this date in 1948, if you remember this, the first Polaroid camera was sold and manufactured and sold. Also, on this date, the first woman Marine General was appointed, Margaret Brewer. That's women getting accepted for their quality of their character and who they are and what they could do for the military. And then we had another woman, controversial, Corazon Aquino, in 1987 after Marcos fled the Philippines. She had what was called the Yellow Revolution. She came from a very wealthy Filipino family. They owned San Miguel Brewery, I think, that beer. And I worked on a part of the case involving the Marcos theft of foreign aid money. We'll get into that another day with my biography. And so now I'm going to play this interview, which was supposed to be played Monday when we had problems with Skype. And Romero, his father, his grandfather fled fascist Italy, Mussolini's Italy, because he didn't want to fight for fascism in the Italian army in Libya and Tunisia and Italian North Africa and Ethiopia. And so he fled to Latin America and he married. So this Romero's ancestry is Italian Hispanic. And he was put in military school, which is funded by U.S. military down there in Latin America. That's where we're getting these M13 kids, which you're hearing about, but nobody knows their origin or they're not talking about it. And he knew something about it. We discussed it. But we'll have that interview Friday because it was a long interview. And since this is the end of the World War II ended on May 8th, I earlier did an interview, and it's still up on the archives, with Professor James Gleason. We discussed Hitler as an artist. This is a different take on Hitler as a artist performer. Here goes.
Gleason. Since today, no, this is interesting. Today, May 8th, is the end of the war in Europe in World War II. Hitler allegedly, supposedly committed suicide. Right. Now, you know about Adolf Hitler.
Oh, the whole Eva Braun thing and the art thingy. And all
right. Well, do you think, this is kind of tongue-in-cheek, do you think if he had been accepted into the Vienna Art School that he wouldn't have gotten into politics?
You know what? I'm going to argue one step further. I think Hitler remained an artist all the way till his death.
Ooh, that's going to upset some people. Why do you say that?
Okay, again, I'm looking at it from just a political way. If you actually have taken the time to look at Hitler's art prior to this interview, you would actually see that Hitler's art was very novice. He really had no artistic taught skill set, but he did have raw emotion. And at some point, people with emotion need a way to express it. And I think what happened with Hitler is he was a passionate person that at some point got introduced to public speaking. And that can be a huge power source. I think at some point Hitler's art became the ability to enthrall people. I mean,
you mean speaking?
Yes, I mean like
as a public. Yeah.
If you look at it,
I don't know what he had.
All the evil aside, all the stuff he did. If you look at him as just as an artist, goddamn, motherfucker was a performance artist. He got up there in front of a pulpit and hyped people up, and
he became
a performance artist to the death. To the point that in his later years when he actually had, like, what, he had, like, Parkinson's or something because of, like, some syphilis whore or something.
Right.
He went as
he had
far
a lot of psychosexual problems.
No, but he went as far as to, like, add to his costume, the shawl he would wear so people wouldn't see the trim.
Right, right.
What do you call that other than a performance art? A magician would do that, too. You know, I gotta hide the hand, you know. So, to an extent, you know, yes, he was a politician, but in a weird way, he remained an artist till the end.
So a different type of artist, like
on
stage.
Evil, very evil artist.
Yeah, Germany was a stage.
Basically, I mean, to an extent, the world was a stage. I mean,
That's a very different. Now, see, you give me a different perspective. I never looked at it exactly that way, even though speech was a major of mine.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, I mean, I can see how people, because I mean, I've had some friends of mine who are performance artists, you know, and I can see why they get enthralled with it. And I can only imagine somebody with that need of attention and that passion, like somebody like Hitler, and then having no validation as an artist, and then getting all this random praise just for being able to talk.
Good point.
It feeds you, you know?
And let's contrast him. Are you familiar? Let me run some names by you.
All right,
Winston Churchill painted.
Yes.
Eisenhower was learned to paint by numbers.
Eisenhower was a funny one, yeah.
Yeah. Now, get this. I just discovered while I was researching this that J. Edgar Hoover would paint, it was one or two paintings, was a Swiss scene. And also, I just did a radio program on his choice of music, which is very interesting. He used the Russian communist composer for one, and then he used Nazi, a guy who was associated with the Nazi, Strauss, for one of the films. And then, yeah, he was an anti-communist, so he said in all of this. But how do you, do you think that Churchill painted as a release from all the tension, all the political turmoil that he got involved in, because he went through three different political parties, liberal, conservative, and there was one other. And then he had the war. He was rejected, and then he became the wartime leader of Great Britain. And then after the war, in the first election, they threw him out. He went back to painting. And then Eisenhower took up painting. And then J. Edgar. So I'm going to put those up on my website.
Well, you know, I think humanity at its core, part of what makes us, or the species we are, is creativity. And I think great men under great stress, actually, let me rephrase, great people under great stress, find creative outlets. It allows the brain to make other connections. You know, if you're under a lot of stress and you're working all the time, you're thinking about speech patterns and stuff, that's how your brain's working. If you sit down to paint, that part relaxes and other connections can be made.
So is this the left side of the brain?
Yeah, I think it makes good connections. I mean, it's great stress you need to do painting and other stuff like that, you know? So I can see how people under great stress like that would go as far as saying, yeah.
So maybe we should prescribe for all these politicians and people in these high stress occupations, get something to relax you, like painting or music.
Music. I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but it is so relaxing. I mean, like, tell me there are not times in your lives when you were, like, going back to golden memories you have, and you're, like, 14, kissing a girl, 16, your first real girlfriend, whatever, and even in the memories, in the back of your head, there's still, like, some sort of, like, song. It sounds flowery. We remember stuff creatively. We are creative people, so it's a great stress relief, you know? It's another way to run simulations.
Define simulations.
Well, think about it like this. Look, your brain is always active, even when you're asleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is dreaming other than running simulations? You know, like the first caveman, he must have dreamt about, you know, like, oh, there's shit, there's this tiger fucking coming after me. I gotta climb a tree. But what you don't understand is, for the 6 hours that he actually spent asleep, his brain and all his muscles learned to react to that. He's running simulations. Art is kind of the same thing. You know, it's a way of tickling your brain. You run a simulation about, like, oh, what if I paint the bomb on top of the cross? Oh, that's funny to me. It tickled your brain. You know, you had this connection where religion is here, Obama's here, I never connect them. I made this painting, I giggled, and then you show it to other people, and then censorship.
Well, it depends who you talk to, who you show it to.
No, but you know what I'm saying? So I think art's the best stress for you because of that. It allows different parts of the brain to connect and different ideas to come together and form.
Okay, one final question. Do you think Americans really, since you've been in this country, 20 years or so, do you think Americans really appreciate art, or is it just too much commercialism?
You know what? I would have to say Americans don't appreciate artists. It's not so much the art. Commercialism will always take art, good art that is made, and just expose it to more and more people. And then we'll begin to hate it because we've seen it so many times. But America has no respect for the process it takes to make art, for the process that sometimes goes into packaging something, or even putting up a single billboard, or even graffiti artists, for the amount of passion and time and man-hours it takes to think of those ideas, to put them out there.
Since we're going along that line, do you think that, like in Canada, they give Canada grants to artists? I know a couple of them.
Man,
do you think the government should...
Hell yeah, where's my fucking Canada grant? I want my...
What do you think the government should... No, do it now. Here's the history for you if you don't know. If you haven't been down to the post office at the Rincon Annex and up to Coit Tower, during the Depression in the 30s, Franklin Roosevelt's administration had the Works Progress Administration where they funded artists to do these murals, and some of them are really beautiful. Do you think we should resume that for artists who are trying to make it and who have some talent?
Oh, definitely.
Or to encourage talent?
Most definitely. It's also to encourage them, but it's also to introduce people to different cultures. You got to keep in mind, America's a big country. We take a huge chunk of this continent. And the more we can get these like culturally rich, like I said, neighborhoods and places expanded, the more it can help other people like understand the world, accept the world. So yeah, I mean, if you, I would be glad to be sponsored, you know, on a fucking graffiti trek to Dakota. You know, like, that'd be great. I mean, I'd go tag on some barns, maybe get a cow up or something. It would be amazing. And, you know, I think these people would actually be amazed to see people being able to do that, you know, in the middle of the night. You know, they got crop circles, we got graffiti. Same thing, you know, happens in the middle of the night. Nobody knows how it was done. And then you just have to
Well, they think it's UFO, people from other planets.
It, you know?
They think it's for people from other planets.
Exactly. For all you know, all graffiti is UFOs, man. It's the same MO, you know. We come in the middle of the night, just, oh, it's up already. So, yeah, you know, I think it should be definitely explored as an idea. Also, just to bring the country together, man. Art has a very simple and easy way to test waters, you know.
So we should have traveling art exhibitions, you think?
Oh, yeah, I mean, like, I would have a lot of fun if they could have, like, you know, like a traveling graffiti show. You just give some art to a bunch of graffiti guys and be like, go from L.A. to Florida. Here's some spray paint. And here's this little card that says you can't get arrested. You're sure to every cop. I can't get arrested. Thank you.
You have immunity. Artistic immunity.
So selected people that are not going to go out there and chicken scratch and make shit up. You know, they're not going to every town to be like, I'm going to put two murals down here. I'm going to put another mural down here. And then 2 days from there, we're gone. Next place. You know, it would be a great idea, man. I would love to do that if we can.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with the interview.
All right, thanks.
Well, Romero, thank you so much. Now you have to give me a list of some paints which we can or some where I can put it up. And we'll have to do we'll have to settle on the avatar.
Oh man, of course, man. Doing my art, man. I can't show my face.
You don't want to.
Oh, I don't want to. Well, damn.
Thanks for being
thank
on the show.
Very much, man.
All right, part two of an interview on the M13 and who these kids are, who they were, how they were trained, and why they became throwaway kids. We're going to do the new format, public policy questions, and among them a lot of people are getting tired of this whole bicycle agenda, where these bicyclists have lobbies, are in effect, they have representation without taxation. They do not pay licensing fees except in a few states. Most of them don't have insurance, although a homeowner insurance do cover people who have bicycles. I have to verify the specifics on that. And if they injure someone, that person's insurance kicks in, the pedestrian, or the public underwrites in the public hospitals, the emergency wards, the insurance and the medical costs for the pedestrian. And this has happened. Bicyclists have run down and injured pedestrians, and some of them have done this bicycling injuries inflicted on pedestrians and done it on purpose. And guess who pays it? It isn't the bicyclist. It's the American taxpayer. So this is another issue. All these special lanes, which are also a hazard. You cannot make a right turn without looking very carefully to see if a bicyclist or a whole pack of bicyclists are barreling down in that curb lane where you want to turn to make your right turn. It's becoming increasingly dangerous to drive any vehicle. And if you hit a bicyclist, guess who pays? Your insurance. So we've got to start thinking about this public policy issue of this representation without taxation. And I think that and a lot of people, cops especially, think that bicyclists should be licensed, they should have liability insurance, and they should be ticketed, because they're literally and figuratively getting away with injury and mayhem on the streets of not only San Francisco, but I hear this problem in other American cities as well. Now, the other thing, let's get on these people who text us. Not only people in vehicles, it's also bicyclists who text and not paying attention. They text and they're on the cell phone. It's time to make texting and cell phone use while people are driving and involved in distracted driving, it's time to make it expensive, make them pay. I've talked to one cop, Richard Badisco, on this, and I think that this $100 fine is just ridiculous. It's just a slap on your pinky, on their pinky, and that doesn't keep them and discourage them from not texting or using the cell phone next time after they pay the fine. Maybe the first fine should be $500 to $750 to $1,000. Second time, $2,500. A third time, $5,000, and if you don't pay, you lose your car. The other thing is people who get, now the third thing of public policy issue we should be thinking about, because there are more and more accidents, and a lot of this is because of not only distracted driving, but aggressive driving. You've got people who get these high-powered cars, these Porsches, these Audis, these Land Rovers, and women, I see an increasing number of women. I've been driving for 50 years. I've never seen anything like this. As bad as it is and is becoming, and we predict it's going to get worse. And guess who pays? It's the safe driver. His auto insurance premiums go up because of the aggressive, reckless driving of other drivers. It's time that we make these people who cause accidents take driver retraining courses and to pay for them. And if they don't do it, they lose their license and their car. It's time to start really cracking down. No more slapping on the pinky. It's time to start taking the wallet. The other thing which is important is that we should start restricting some of these vehicles that the people have. It's ridiculous. They have the tinted windows, which they can't see out of. And if they're involved in a crime, how do you identify the driver or people in the car? You can't see through that black paint. I thought that was illegal. So these are some of the public policy issues that we ought to be addressing, because it's costing the American taxpayer, the careful driver who drives, the careful pedestrian, and even the careful bicyclists. There are bicyclists out there who respect the rules of the road. Friday, we'll have the best of the week. We'll have the M13 interview with Romero, and there will be updates and more public policy questions, and we'll end with our usual theme, politics and poker, which is what it's all about with these politicians. So we will see you Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and here goes.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Info.
Possible straight. Possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of? Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say, when you got a pair of jacks, bet out.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions like
who to pick,
how to play, how to bet,
where to call up.
Politics or poker, which is more important?
Parrot raise.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll call.
I'll call.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Panichikovich, I'm certain he's run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
Well, that applies to Pawlenty in Minnesota, and we'll get into the Minnesota curse and the presidential candidates. This is Peter Paul Bozzaro. We'll see you Friday and go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, and you'll see some interesting things about what's the matter with the San Francisco Chronicle. Good night.